Tanachum Siegel Network, welcome to this edition of By the Book. Our friends at Curran Publications bring you an amazing author each and every week, and we get the opportunity to feature them here at the Nachum Siegel Network. Go to KorenPub.com, KorenPub.com. Today's book released on the Magid Books label. And the Koren, as usual, this time of year, it's always throughout the entire year, but especially this time of year, they're always releasing incredible material out there is well worth researching on their website. Go to KorenPub.com, KorenPub.com. Today we have the opportunity to speak with Betzalel Na'or. Betzalel Na'or is the author of many works of Jewish thought in English and Hebrew, with a major concentration in the writings of the great Harav Kook, Rabbi Abraham Isaac HaKohen Kook, who lived from 1865 to 1935, was the first Ashkenazic chief rabbi of Eretz Yisrael. His unique approach to the Jewish people, flowing from a heart full of love and intellect of cosmic scope, but above all a soul invaded by mystic God consciousness, endeared him to both the scholars and pietists of the old yeshuv and the settlers and revolutionaries of the new yeshuv. Betzalel Na'or, translator of Orot, welcome to the Nachum Siegel Network.
Thank you for having me.
What a pleasure speaking to you. Are you one of the few people who really understands Rav Kook, who gets the entire spectrum of thought that he covered in his lifetime?
Well, Nachum, I think that would be arrogance on my part to say that I fully comprehend Rav Kook. I do the best I can.
Is it safe or fair to say he's one of the most misunderstood Torah giants of our time?
He's misunderstood and unfortunately suffered a lot of abuse has pretty much been written out of Haredi history,
right? And that segment of the Jewish population controls a lot of the, I don't know, I guess what we would call the heritage of the Gedolim, those who are revered generation to generation. Would that be accurate?
Well, I guess they're the ones that are writing the authoritative histories. But you know, Nachum, a lot of young people are not buying it, and they're searching for answers, and they're going back to the sources, and they're discovering that Rav Kook, while he lived, was acknowledged as certainly one of the Gedolei Hador, embraced by Haredi Jewry. There were a few of his contemporaries who had little use for him, but they were in the minority. The majority of the Gedolei Yisrael during Rav Kook's lifetime revered him.
Yeah, and you speak about so many of the episodes and controversies and grievances and all the different things that many different things that went on during that period of time. It's there in the introduction to the book. Where did Orot fit in terms of his? In terms of his rabbinic career, if you will, in terms of his popularity within the masses, at what point in his life was Orot written?
Yeah, we have to put it into a historical context. After World War I, Rav Kook, who had spent the war years in London, was invited by the Jews of Jerusalem to serve as their rav. Those that extended the invitation to him were great halachists such as Rabbi Tzvi Pesach Frank, Rabbi Yaakov Moshe Chalap, and others. And Rav Kook accepted the invitation. He traveled from London to Jerusalem. He also had his own political agenda, which would have been a third way. It was neither the Mizrahi nor the Aguda. He called it Degel Yerushalayim. Huh. He had his own vision. And Orot really was the mouthpiece for this vision. It was issued in 1920, soon after Rav Kook's arrival in Jerusalem. And it presented his platform, his vision for the emerging nation.
Is there a way to sum it up? Is there a way to, you know, tell, to relate to us what that vision was in short?
You know, a lot of it has come of time. Things that he wrote in 1920 that were misunderstood today would be absolutely embraced by most Jews. One of the things he wrote that was very controversial at the time was the necessity of physical exercise, that, right, that young men and women should engage in physical exercise, hitamlut. He also was a pioneer in the field of outreach. You know, today a lot of different groups are engaged in kiruv rechokim and outreach to the alienated and disaffected Jews, but Rav Kook was really the pioneer in that field. Before Chabad, before Or Sameach, before Eshet Torah, Rav Kook was doing that. He was going out to the settlements, which were populated by people who were very turned off to traditional Judaism, and he was embracing them and loving them, and in some cases that love was reciprocated. Now, at the time, he came under scathing attack from many of his fellow rabbis for doing this kind of outreach.
Yeah. So he was a revolutionary in that that period of time was not ready for him, I guess, and he was a pioneer in that he was one of the very first to introduce some of these concepts to the Jewish world.
Yeah, he was very far ahead of his time. Some of the things, as I said, today have come of time, and others are still awaiting their time.
Had this project come to you many years ago? It was 20 years ago that you wrote the translation, right?
Well, yeah, back in 1993, it was first published. And I've been in love with Rav Kook since I was a student. It goes back to my student days. And I attended various yeshivot, both modern Orthodox and Haredi, at different phases of my career, and was searching. I was looking for answers. I was looking for God, and I looked in many different places, and the man who really saved my life, so to speak, was Rav Kook.
Because of that book?
Initially, it was the letters, the igrot of Rav Kook. I opened up one day a volume of his letters, and I felt that he was speaking to me.
And did he write a lot? Is this one of many volumes that he wrote over his life, or this is a rarity?
Rav Kook is one of our most prolific writers. With all that's been published of his literary oeuvre, there remains a tremendous amount in manuscript. And the guardians of those manuscripts tease out the material very slowly over the years.
Interesting. Speaking to Betzalel Na'or, translator of Orot, and the brand new book is called Orot, and we'll explain the function of the brand new book in just a moment. Nonetheless, you could be in love with his philosophy and be enthralled by his writings. Nonetheless, the step to then become the translator is quite a leap. How did that occur?
Hello?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, a little bit got bleeped out.
Oh, I apologize. I was saying that, you know, being in love with his material and him having this role in, you know, in the way he inspired you in your own life, it's still a leap, so to speak, to become the translator of his books. How did that happen?
I have to be frank. When I first started reading Rav Kook, I understood very little. I was inspired by the poetic language, but I would have been at a loss to tell you what exactly it was I had read. And that's the finding of a lot of people. You can get high reading Rav Kook, but you'd be hard-pressed to explain clearly and lucidly what exactly has been communicated. I nonetheless persevered, and eventually there was a breakthrough where I could not only understand what he was saying, but actually translate it into English. But it took a long time, believe me.
Yeah. I suspect, and maybe it's just because I hang out in a certain type of crowd, I would suspect it was very popular when made available to the public, the translation, or am I wrong?
This new edition is very popular.
No, referring back to 20 years ago.
Oh, to 93?
Yeah.
It was a success.
Right.
One of the perks of the Koren edition, as you said, it's under the Magid logo,
right,
is that this time around, Orot is being offered in a bilingual edition. So those who are more scholarly are able to go back to the Hebrew original and check out the veracity or validity of my translation.
Right. Let them be their own judge if they want, I guess. And on top of that, you wrote a new introduction for this volume, correct?
I did, because 20 years later, I discovered so many more facets to this story. Again, when Orot came out in 1920, all hell broke loose. There were Haramim, the Kanaim, the zealots in Yerushalayim issued a cherem against it. It was proscribed literature.
Because he had the nerve to say what?
Yeah, there were a few pet peeves. One that we mentioned was Hitamlu,
right,
the
exercise.
Right. Another, embracing the sinners of Israel, the Poshei Yisrael, as they're called. This was unheard of at the time, although today it's become standard practice to do outreach. Also, his Zionism. Rav Kook was very outspoken in his support of the Zionist enterprise of Jews settling in Eretz Yisrael. And there wasn't a Medina yet. There wasn't a Medinat Israel. The State of Israel wasn't declared until 1948. At that time, it was a British satrap, Palestine, under the British mandate. But the handwriting was on the wall that a state would come eventually. And Rav Kook, through his enormous Torah learning and piety behind this Zionist enterprise.
Unbelievable. And I guess that had to have been, even more than physical exercise, the most controversial of his viewpoints, right? I would guess. Certainly the most famous.
Well, you know, he spoke about the Tzavah, that there would be a Jewish army,
right,
and a Jewish state, and all of the trappings of statehood. And as you know, to this day, some Jews and some rabbis are loath to endorse the state of Israel.
Yeah, well, that's true. Although some people are coming around on the issue, and we even find people in the Haredi world who are at least supporters of the army and feel the need to express their love for their brethren who defend the land. My father used to say that the Rambam during his lifetime was not nearly as popular as hundreds of years later. Do you sometimes get the feeling that Rav Kook is on the same type of trajectory, that, you know, years from now he'll be much more appreciated than he was during his lifetime?
Look, works of the Rambam were burned.
Right.
In Paris, the Moreh HaNebuchim, the right. Rambam's work of philosophy, Guide of the Perplexed, was burned by
right.
The French rabbis, and today Rambam, Maimonides, is universally embraced. So it is possible that one day many more segments or sectors of the Jewish people will come around to recognize the greatness of this man.
And Rav Kook, you mentioned, you know, physical exercise seems to be a modern concept. We mentioned Zionism certainly seems to be attributed to more modern people, more modern Jews. Yet, as a person, you would, and again, you know, we never met him, but as a person, one would say he was anything but modern, correct?
He did not dress modern. In fact, a lot of Haredi and Hasidic Jews, when they see a photograph of Rav Kook, are astounded because they have a certain mental picture of Rav Kook as a modern rabbi, either clean-shaven or perhaps with a goatee and in modern dress. And they see a man wearing a spodek, a fur hat, and a long beard and payas, and he's in the traditional rabbinic attire. So they're taken aback. But underneath the spodek was a man who was thoroughly conversant with the modern era. And as we've already said, he was a visionary. He really was seeing things that are yet to come about.
And the whole concept of the holy and the secular, I guess more as an offshoot of this whole concept of whether it be Zionism, exercise, and other things. But we talk about the holy and the secular. That was him, right? There could be no secular concept. If he'd be watching two kids playing soccer in Israel, he would find holiness in that secular activity, right?
Well, I see you're well read. You know, Rav Kook has this immanentist vision of godliness, which comes out of Hasidism. You know, it goes back to the Baal Shem Tov and gets amplified in Chabad. And Rav Kook was seeing godliness. The Hebrew word would be Elohut, or in Yiddish they'd say Getlichkeit. He was seeing godliness in everything. It's a panentheistic view. And Rav Kook, I would say, takes it perhaps even beyond Hasidic thought, where, as you said, it imbues every aspect of life, even the most secular.
Right, the most mundane. And when it came to the state of Israel, and like you say, it's obvious, or it seems so at least, that he felt it was imminent, that he felt it was an inevitability. Was that for the reason that others historically felt it was necessary because of safety for Jews, because of conditions during World War I, and of course afterwards World War II, that would demand such a state, or was it a much more spiritual point of view that made him feel that way?
Yeah. When you open up the book I wrote, the first section is entitled Eretz Yisrael, and the very first piece, the first page, Nachum, addresses what you've been saying, and that is that Eretz Yisrael, the land of Israel, is not merely a means to an end. Eretz Yisrael is an end in itself. And Rav Kook writes very eloquently that unless we Jews are able to tap into the sacred quality of our land, we're missing the point. It's not a safe haven for persecuted Jews. Right. It is that too, but to reduce it to that would be to miss the point.
You know, tangentially, you mentioned Chabad earlier. There seem to be, you know, equitable points of view between Rav Kook and the Lubavitcher Rebbe when it comes to the land of Israel.
Well, the Lubavitch movement changed over the years in its view of the Zionist enterprise. If you go back to the fifth Rebbe, Rabbi Shalom Dov Ber, he was very much opposed to Herzlian Zionism. And that continued for most of the lifetime of his successor, the sixth Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Schneerson. But with the founding of the state in 1948, and I think also the Belzer of Aaron Rukeach had something to do with this, Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak somewhat revised his thinking and supported settling his Hasidim in the land of Israel. And by the time you come to his successor, the seventh rabbi, Rabbi Nachum Mendel Schneerson, you get a very open support of Medinat Yisrael.
Hmm. The only advantage of Kook had was that he thought of this before there was a state. And he was aspiring to it and understood the importance of it before there was a state. What about the term Degel Yerushalayim? Is it, I don't know, anything unusual about that, that he would use that term as opposed to the word Yisrael or Yehuda or anything else that could have been symbolic of the sovereignty or the eventual sovereignty of the Jewish nation?
That's a good point that you raised, Nachum. You had the Zionist movement, and the key word there is Tzion, mm-hmm. Zion.
Right.
And Rav Kook wanted to balance that out with Yerushalayim, Jerusalemism. So you'd have Zionism devoted to the whole, to the secular aspect of building the land, and that would be complemented by Yerushalmiut, Jerusalemism, which would attend to the sacred.
I read the account of his appearance at the founding or at the groundbreaking of Hebrew University. Was it the groundbreaking or the ceremony to open the school?
Yeah, 1925.
And essentially what happened was that he was supposed to be accompanied by other Orthodox rabbis and ended up not being there?
Yes. That anecdote comes from Rabbi Yaakov Moshe Chalap, that the original plan was that Rav Kook would attend the ceremony flanked by his entire Bet Din, which included Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank and others. But what happened was their automobile broke down on the way to Har HaTzofim, to Mount Scopus. And then Rav Kook was left alone to confront the forces of secularism.
Right. And that was a very, very good example of the difficult battle that he had ahead.
Yeah, he was a lone warrior on that occasion.
Right. And all too often after that, I guess we would say. The subsequent generations, because so many of us grew up with as great admirers of his son and grandson, did they ever have these types of battles or have anything close to what the first chief rabbi, Rabbi Abraham Isaac HaKohen Kook, had?
Well, his son was Reb Tzvi Yehuda HaKohen Kook, and he, to this day, is a very controversial figure. He was the spiritual leader of Gush Emunim, which is the settler movement.
Mm-hmm.
And some Jews are totally in favor of these hitnachluyot, these settlements beyond the Green Line, and others are opposed. And therefore, as I said, Rav Kook's son, Rav Tzvi Yehuda, is a very controversial figure.
Right. I guess the reason I don't look at him as controversial is because, really, in many ways, he was fulfilling what his father had trailblazed for. You know, in other words, what he had established philosophically, he was then going ahead and carrying out practically.
Yeah, so even that question is debated. To what extent Rav Tzvi Yehuda is the continuation of his father, and in what ways did he depart from his father's legacy?
Right.
But one thing I think we can safely say is that Rav Tzvi Yehuda was his own man.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't a party person. And as we said, his father really was not an Agudist nor a Mizrachist. He was his own man. He had his own vision. And I think we can say that about Rav Tzvi Yehuda, too, that he was fiercely independent.
Betzalel Na'or, author of many works of Jewish thought in English and Hebrew, with a major concentration on the writings of the great seer of Israel, Rav Kook. Rabbi Abraham Isaac HaKohen Kook lived from 1865 to 1935, first chief rabbi of what would eventually be, of course, the state of Israel, but we'll say the land of Israel. The translation of Orot is done by Betzalel Na'or years ago. The new introduction and the side-by-side Hebrew-English that gives you an even greater opportunity to study both is included in this brand new work. I say congratulations to you. Only this experience, since you were offered to us as a guest in the last few days, only this experience taught me the amazing role you have in disseminating the incredible writings of Rav Kook to previous generations, to my generation, and to future generations. So kol hakavod, and thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Nachum. It's been a pleasure.
I appreciate that. But Salah Na'or, I highly recommend that everybody, especially if you are of the Jewish household that would appreciate a book like this, and there are many people from Jewish households like that who are tuned in right now, go and pick up or order online. Koren Publications has it. It's a Magid book release. KorenPub.com, KorenPub.com. The book called Orot, Rabbi Abraham Isaac HaKohen Kook, translation, Betzalel Na'or. It is something that your Jewish library should have, and I mean your personal library, your personal Jewish library should have, and we highly recommend it, and I thank Betzalel Na'or for joining me here today at the Nachum Segal Network. You're listening to Buy the Book. Our friends at Koren Publications, as usual, providing a wonderful guest on a great topic and doing an amazing job, especially this time of year, releasing to the public brand new material for all of us to enjoy. I hope everybody out there takes advantage. You can go to korenpub.com, korenpub.com for information. I remind you to continue to follow us on social media, on Facebook. It's our Facebook update page is simply entitled Nachum Segal Network, on Twitter at Nachum Segal Net, and on Instagram, Nachum Segal Network. Buy the Book is brought to you by our friends at Koren Publications. Check out their website now, korenpub.com. And see Betzalel Na'or with the book Orot, an amazing translation and really an updated volume of this great classic of Rabbi Abraham Isaac HaKohen Kook. And thank you for listening to the Nachum Segal Network. ¶¶